August 25th, 2025. Welcome to This Week in Waukesha, the podcast series from Civic Media, produced in cooperation with WAUK Radio 540 AM and Word Brown, using the power of words to change the world. I am your host, Downtown Donnie Brown, coming to you from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown here in the Work Hub Studios in the Five Points of downtown Waukesha. I'm joined, as always, by my extraordinary young producer, the mighty Max Martinson, working from the comfort of his home. Although I know you were in Radio Park Saturday morning, weren't you doing a Jim Santel show?
I was actually down at Pettit Ice Center doing a report on the Milwaukee Fellows' 25th anniversary of their fellowship open, and they had a panel of former Olympians there that day.
Oh, very cool.
So they had Jackie Joyner Kersee and then Dr. John Carlos and Tommy Smith there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Tommy Smith. What about Noah Eric Heiden, huh? Those all track people?
Yeah, it was just them for the panel, but still really cool.
That is awesome. No kidding. Especially Tommy Smith. What an honor.
Yeah.
So well, terrific. You know, it's we're getting near the end of summer, not on the calendar, but in many ways, school is a week away. Labor Day weekend is coming up, and don't forget to catch my podcast from last week with Jim Macon, the retired union carpenter and rep for the union carpenters in New York City, talking about his experiences and what organized labor had meant for his family and his life. Really, really proud of that effort to have captured him. And then Monday tonight, the time of this recording, is the beginning of week two of the high school football season. I believe all three Waukesha public high schools were victorious in their season opener. Catholic Memorial, unfortunately, lost a heartbreaker to Mighty Franklin, 23-20. But I was at Ken Halib Stadium on Friday watching our beloved Black Shirts of Waukesha South triumph over Milwaukee Lutheran, 35-22. So, and more on that later, maybe. But on a more serious note, this September is also National Suicide Prevention Month. And to talk about that, I'm honored to have an old friend, an old colleague, an accomplished building construction industry professional, executive, and also very active in the Democratic Party. Many of you Waukesha residents may remember when he ran against the incumbent Jim Sensenbrenner a few years ago, but also played some leadership roles in the state Democratic Party and the DNC. Well, we'll talk more about that later. But proud to have on the show for the very first time, Caree Pennebaker. Caree, welcome. How are you?
I am living the dream, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Means a lot. And Caree's been very outspoken about his advocacy for mental health, improving the state of mental health in this country. He's been very public about his own experience. His mother had lost her battle with depression when Caree was just 2 years old. Is that correct?
Not even 2 years old. Yeah.
Not even. Yeah. God bless. And also on the same note, you're very outspoken about, very unapologetically unspoken about gun control. And, before this interview, I was doing some research and was astounded to learn that suicide rates have actually increased 31% compared to 20 years ago. That was based on a 2023 study. And a lot of that is based on lack of mental health resources and the availability of guns and firearms. And so, Caree, I'll let you take over. Tell me how you think the state of things are going in this effort of regarding suicide prevention and improving mental health.
Sure. So again, I appreciate you having me on. I do think we are, from some respects, in a very sad state of affairs, because the people who care about the issue aren't in control of the legislation that's going to actually help drive those statistics down. And I think the sad part about it is when we have conversations about suicide prevention and mental health, we oftentimes talk about the issue from a almost like a purely statistical perspective, right? Like those numbers really are black and white. Those numbers, when you talk like that, don't really convey the pain that those of us who have family members who have been shot, wounded, killed, or otherwise, like those numbers don't bleed like they have. Those numbers don't suffer like
sure.
we did.
Sure.
So I what I try to do is put a face to that number and help people to understand that there's a human side, a human tragedy to those statistics. It's not just, you know, where you lose 50 to 60 people per day to suicide. Those are 50 to 60 family members. Those are parents and mothers and you know, fathers and husbands and brothers and sisters. Like you really have to look at this from a human perspective. And, you know, even when I was at the forefront of the issue and was out advocating, you know, from coast to coast and doing all those things, you know, I would often get pushback from people who would say, like the first thing that they would say after I would say, but my mom shot and killed herself, they would say, well, it's not the gun's fault. And, you know, I mean, it like when you hear something like that,
right?
It people care more about the gun than what happened to my mom.
Yeah.
Or they would say something really cruel and say, well, you know, if she didn't use the gun, she would have found another way. As if I now have to imagine another way that my mom could have ended her life. As if the first one wasn't tragic enough.
Yeah.
I think we, you know, we lack the kind of like the humanity.
Yes.
Especially around these so-called controversial issues where we can see the human, not really just the humanity, but the human side. Like there is a real person on the other side of that barrel, right? Mm-hmm. That is struggling with something, that is lying to them. That I think we don't really have another issue that is on par with how bad we treat people when they are faced with something so catastrophic. Think of it this way.
Yeah, yeah.
Here in Wisconsin, it is easier to get a gun than it is to get your first mental health care appointment. Think about that.
Yeah.
You can go get a gun today, but can you get a mental health appointment today with a therapist? No, you can't.
Yeah.
It is easier to buy a gun in Wisconsin than it is to get a license to be a cosmetologist. Think that is wild. It is easier to get a gun in Wisconsin than it is to get a license to be a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
When you put these things in context, you can see how warped the idea is. I have no interest at all in advocating with or for the outright abolition of guns. I don't support that. It's not what our country's founded on.
Right.
It's not something I advocate for.
Yeah.
I advocate for common sense gun violence prevention measures that will keep people alive.
Exactly.
And I think there are people who advocate for this reasonable approach. They're on both sides of the aisle that just honestly, you know, are looking at things from a reasonable and responsible perspective where they want to help people stay alive and not have easy access to a gun when they should.
Right. I mean, you have to jump through a few hoops to get a hunting license, correct?
Yes.
You all same thing. You got to jump through some hoops to drive for getting on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't laugh. I was my 15-year-old daughter. I had to have a heart to heart with her because my wife, you know, her mom's been teaching her to drive, and you've been through that, I believe, already as a parent. It's a lot of hard love. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. And so I get to play good cop.
Yeah.
I love my wife, but, and just tell that, you know, the reason why you're putting yourself in a life or death situation when you're driving. And when you're new at it, it's kind of like, you know, being a little kid and getting your hands near the hot stove, you know, you're going to get screamed at. It's just, it's part of life. It's part of that learning curve. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't that make the same amount of sense for someone interested in purchasing a firearm? I mean, to buy a motorcycle, I think you have to take, I mean, you could buy a motorcycle, but to learn how to ride it, you got to take classes. And I think you even need certifications. Cause again, it's, you're operating dangerous machinery.
Right.
And a gun, you know, motorcycle may not be intended to kill, but a gun kind of is, even if it's, you know, if you're using it for hunting.
Yeah. I mean, like when you really, really think about these things, like it, there has been like a shift from being responsible to let's focus on like the pervasiveness of gun culture and having this idea that if the fear is the ultimate selling tool that all we have to do is just make people afraid of the other. Mm. Now we need a gun at all times to defend ourselves, all these things. But like, you ignore the other side of that equation, though. Like, when you introduce a gun into the home environment, you are more likely to use it on yourself or someone you love than in a safe.
Yeah.
And yeah. They don't teach these things.
Sure.
I mean, I got a concealed carry permit. I don't, my permit expired. I don't have to fire the gun. Never did I have to fire. I wasn't required to. Even then, when I took the course back in 2012, there was no time frame that the class needed to be for. It wasn't like it said you needed to take a 10-hour course or 5-hour course. It's how long the instructor wants to take it or teach it for.
Wow.
And that is, it's wild to me. Like,
you're loosely regulated, huh?
Like a deadly tool in my hand, and then not helping me know like the ins and outs and how to use all kinds of things that we just take for granted. But ultimately, though, I think reasonable people would agree that we can be a gun owning culture and still prioritize mental health and reducing suicides without making the argument about they're coming to take your guns from you.
Right.
Like, think of it like this way. Like, my mom can't have a gun anymore because she's dead. She has zero rights because she's dead. Right. I don't know what it is like to hear my own mother tell me that she loves me because she's dead. Right. So like, these people will fetishize over guns and things like that, but like, they always ignore the catastrophic impact it has on people like me. My mom is dead. Yeah. Period.
Sure. And you know, and we've spoken about this too, is I have a family member who is a survivor of a very severe case of depression, suicidal depression, and going on more than 30 years. And yes, our stories turned out a bit better than your own family's, but there was, you know, during those 2 or 3 years, it was, you know, very a very painful time, very you know, very exhausting. And so, and that's what people, there's levels to this, like there is with anything else. There's an extraordinary amount of pain. There's also, we believe, a genetic predisposition. And so, you know, I worry about my children. I'm sure you probably worry about your children and other family members. I did learn that I had, you know, when we were going through this in the early mid 90s, and of course, you know, we didn't tell anybody. There was still this, well, there still is a stigma, unfortunately, today, but back then it was even worse. But I'd learned I had an aunt, my grandmother's sister, who had died, and everyone said she died of a broken heart. Because her husband had left her for another woman or something like that. And well, it was more than a broken heart. It was, you know, she had she'd lost her battle with depression and taken her own life. And again, you know, people didn't talk about those things back then. And and unfortunately, and again, it's also troubling knowing that we've come so far in terms of our understanding or increasing our understanding, but yet to see these rates increase the way they have is mind-boggling.
It is, and I think that is one of the good things of social media. When you have various organizations like the Suicide Prevention Hotline, or the other organizations, Stop Suicide Now, those kinds of places that are really advocating in spaces where the younger generations will be. So you can have an increase of awareness of this issue, not just to say that we are in those spaces, but to get more awareness about it so you can recognize the signs of it. Half the time, not even half the time, but a lot of the time, it could be something as simple as smiling at someone or opening the door for someone. Like, you could really be like the reason that person doesn't feel alone today, simply because you were nice to them. You were kind to them. You actually saw them, and they just weren't, you know, a part of the backdrop. You really could change someone's entire life perspective with one random act of kindness. And I think we forget that as a human being, we need that kind of connectedness, even if it's a small gesture, like buying coffee for someone or opening a door, or just really a simple smile.
Just saying good morning.
Well, I see you, right? Like, the amount of change we can impact just by being kind is amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I'm so glad to hear you say that too. And that's why it's important for our teachers and for our leaders, anybody in a leadership role, especially in the workplace. Mm-hmm. That's so important to reinstill, value in people and using positive thinking,
right,
to motivate people in a positive direction. And it's just amazing. I've been in some hostile work environments, and I know other people that have. And it's so mentally exhausting,
mm-hmm,
that if it is, if it isn't suicidal depression, it has other impacts on your overall health for sure. Right.
Absolutely.
And so I really I applaud you for, that a holistic approach that starts with just being kind to somebody,
mm-hmm,
and recognizing their value as fellow, right, human beings is key. So how are you doing on time here, Max? 4 minutes. Okay, terrific. So what is there anything you've been working on recently to create awareness or to try to move the needle on trying to improve mental health and suicide prevention at the local level?
Well, kind of nothing and everything.
Right.
At the same time. So, I had done a lot of advocacy across the country for various organizations.
That's right.
Put myself in harm's way. I did all those things, but sure, I did not work on myself. So I would go out and advocate for the issue. I believe in the issue, but I just didn't work on myself. And got to a point where I realized that, if I'm not healthy, I can't help anybody else.
Sure.
So I had to stop and take a step back from what I have been doing and slow things down so I can focus on myself and get to a place where I'm okay. There were a lot of times where, I would, the drug for me was giving the speeches and meeting the people. But when that event or rally was done,
mm-hmm,
I was crushed. I couldn't function. It was very hard to,
sure,
exists without that. And I had to get to a place where that's not what I needed. I could spend alone time with myself, or that, sure, I could really, get help. I've advocated for, especially men, being unafraid to ask for help. There's a real stigma about that, especially in communities of color. And I wanted to make sure, hey, if I can advocate for this,
that
will be the one that does it.
Sure, sure. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was surprised to learn too that the rates among men are 4 times higher than women.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, but that's
far more frequent for men to complete suicide than it is for women.
And it's also very common among men, or just people that tend to be very acutely intelligent, people that are normally very accomplished people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a shock to someone, I can't believe he did that. He's a doctor. He has 3 homes. There's a lot. Mike Wallace, formerly of 60 Minutes, who's since deceased, that he'd struggled with it for 6 years. He could barely function even. And it had finally had overcome it. And, a few other celebrities like that. And, and of course, I remember when Robin Williams had lost his battle, that had taken a lot out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Given all that he'd, contributed, as an entertainer.
You never know the demon that a person's hiding. So
That's
why, if you can employ that random act of kindness, you really can change the world.
Sure, sure. So, hey, in our second segment, I want to talk more with Curry about, you made an interesting point earlier about that it was easier to get an appointment, it's easier to get a gun than it was to schedule an appointment for mental health therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering maybe if that's not the best comparison, because it seems one could argue it's easier to get a seat on Elon Musk's spaceship to Mars than it is to get good mental health therapy to see a therapist once a week. So we'll talk about that more, the cost of it, the stigma surrounding it,
mm-hmm,
and so many other issues preventing proper care, really for all of us, because I'm a big believer that everyone deserves good mental health therapy. We could all, see someone once a week for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us in segment one of This Week in Waukesha. Stick around with more with Curry Pennebaker. And we'd love to hear what you think on social media too. So thanks, Max. We'll see you in round two.